Welcome to the SpursDynasty.com podcast.
It's the SDP, and I'm Steven, as always, joined by Trace. Trace, what's going on, man? How are you, bud?
Good evening. Just soaking up the NBA playoffs, trying to forget what happened last night, trying to just enjoy what's going on tonight, and looking forward to seeing the Spurs play at home on Thursday.
Yes, sir. That is my main man, Trace. You can follow him on Twitter at Dina, D-I-N-N-A, underscore dog, D-A-W-G. You can follow me at The Hailstone. Trace, let's get right into this right now, man. It has been a rough first two games. The Spurs find themselves in a 0-2 hole coming out of game one and two. Looking forward to Thursday night's game three in San Antonio. Hopefully we see some change. But, Grace, tell me, what are some adjustments that you feel like we need to see from the San Antonio Spurs as they play the Golden State Warriors heading back to the AT&T Center in the Alamo City on Thursday night?
Yeah, the one adjustment that I think it's the most glaringly obvious adjustment, and it's not super insightful, but it's kind of simply they need to make more of their shots. Mm-hmm. There was a big problem, especially, and San Antonio hung pretty tight with Golden State in game two, and for the first half at least, and halfway through the third quarter, maybe not even that far, because Golden State came out hot in the third quarter, but it just became obvious that they just didn't have enough firepower, and they were the Spurs were taking plenty of threes. It's not like their shot selection was wrong. And a lot of them, I thought, had good looks. But, you have – I'll just read you some lines here. Patty Mills went 3 for 9. Rudy Gay needs to stop shooting threes. I don't know who told him he had a green light on the three, but he needs to stop doing that. Danny Green went 0 for 3. Yeah, Bertans was 1 for 6. Ginobili missed all three of his threes. Good night as far as what you hope to get out of Manu Ginobili in this series. But, Pop said in the post-game presser, he's like, I liked our scheme. I thought when we played well within the scheme that we tried to run out there tonight, that we hung with the Warriors as best we could, had a lead for a while. As soon as the third quarter started and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant decided we're just going to make every single shot we take, it was just too much for San Antonio to overcome. So unless they're here's an adjustment. DeJounte Murray needs to stop being a complete liability. And maybe if so, he can be the body that we put on Klay Thompson, but I don't think that's going to stop him. What about you?
No, I think it's really frustrating because we've watched the growth of DeJounte Murray this year, which has really been phenomenal. I mean, he's got incredible heart. He's had some real moments of flair and pizzazz that have been encouraging. He's got tons of athleticism. I think his work ethic is right on par with where it needs to be. He's quick. He plays pretty good on the ball defense, but offensively, man, just absolutely right word that you used there was a liability. He just can't be on the court with a team like the Golden State Warriors where they can scheme you, when they can get in their video room and they can come up with a game plan. It was incredibly too easy to take DeJounte Murray out of the game. And really the same was true with Kyle Anderson. I mean, the Warriors didn't even attempt to play defense against Kyle Anderson. It was a complete, please shoot it. Like, we want you to shoot it. And the same was with DeJounte Murray. And I think DeJounte Murray got yanked whenever he got the ball ripped away from him from Andre Iguodala. It was almost like Greg Popovich's moment to go, okay, you guys can't shoot and your defense is, questionable right now because you kind of look like, I think Pop used the word in game one, like a deer in headlights. And if you can't hang on to the ball, if you can't do those three things, then sit on the bench. And we didn't see very much of DeJounte Murray or Kyle Anderson for that matter. And man, that's a big problem going forward because the alternative to some of those guys isn't much better anyways. And it leaves us with the likes of Bryn Forbes, Tony Parker. We saw Davis Bertan get some minutes in game two. And that's not what you want. We've kind of got used to Kyle Anderson and DeJounte Murray being on the court for the majority of the year. And now here we are in this series. And those are young guys that you would like to see try and get some meaningful minutes. But Trace, they just can't stay on the court, man. They can't score the ball. They are an offensive liability. It's like 5-on-3 out there.
Yeah, you know, and those are two guys were two people you and I talked about before the series started, like who are going to really have to have some of their best basketball in this series against mm-hmm. Golden State if San Antonio has any chance to upset. And they are doing the exact opposite of what you and I hope for. And it's kind of crazy. You know, Davis Bertans played almost 26 minutes the other night, and that's not really – if this is a G League game, I'd be amused by that. But this is a NBA playoff game, and he went 1-for-7. That's not going to cut it.
Oh, no. You know, I tweeted something out here today that was pretty telling about this stuff specifically with our guard play. Trace, but and people talk a lot about the plus minus stat, and the plus minus stat can be a little bit deceiving. It's basically the difference between a team's scoring versus their opponent's scoring whenever a player is in the game. So I'm going to read you our plus minus stats for our guard play, Trace, and we're going to assume for the point of this exercise, because largely he does handle the ball sometimes, that Kyle Anderson in this instance is a guard. So I've lumped him in. But here you go. Here's our guard play. Patty Mills, -6. Danny Green, -26, Trace. DeJounte Murray, -14. Bryn Forbes, -12. Tony Parker, -3. Kyle Anderson actually had a +2. Go figure. And Manu Ginobili was our leading plus-minus for our guards at +6. That's bad, Trace. That is really bad. They're not beating anybody with that type of guard play. They're just not, man.
No, man. Danny Green was, I think, especially abused in Game 2, and I don't know exactly what, you know, going into the series. If I thought that there were two guys who were going to be able to kind of not neutralize but best contain the guys they'd be stacked up against, it would have been Danny Green on Klay Thompson and a combination of Aldridge and Kyle Anderson on Kevin Durant. And you know, Aldridge doesn't get a lot of time with Kevin Durant, but I thought it would be more of like a rotation thing. You know, Kyle guards him on the wing and he tries to go inside, and Aldridge has to make some adjustments and come around to save him. But Danny Green definitely stacked up against Klay Thompson and, you know, he and Kevin Durant, which is probably why he's down at -26, because both of those guys torched him anytime they got near him on Monday night. And I'm at a loss, you know, like on the one hand, it's kind of like, well, you got to tip your hat to Klay Thompson. He made like 97% of his shots, it felt like. And same with Kevin Durant, but they got to do something. I don't know what that thing is. Like, I don't look at the roster and see another guy you can put on either one. Like, Rudy Gay is, sure, he's a little bigger, so, you know, you might think that his body would be better suited to stop Durant, but Durant's way too fast. He's way too, like, you know, he's way too quick, I don't want to say like slithery like a snake, but he can get around Rudy Gay like no problem. So
great analogy.
It looks to me like, you know, unless we had five Kawhi Leonards on the court, then there's no way you can possibly guard all the guys that the Warriors are going to throw at you.
Sure. And we'll get to Kawhi here in a second. But, you know, I tell you, Trace, I have a person to assign the blame for in losing the first two games, at least. And you can say what you will about the players, but I think Greg Popovich is responsible for both of those first two losses. I think he's been outcoached tremendously by Steve Kerr, his, you know, somewhat protege. But Greg Pop, I don't know, man. He at times he looks like disinterested, almost like he's already, like, I feel like he already knows that he's lost the series. And so that's okay if he's like, okay, we're going to lose this, so I'm just going to play younger guys, and I don't really care if we lose by 40. We're going to, you know, we're going to do our, you know, we're going to roll these guys out here from, you know, for some experience. But he's still, like, coaching like he's trying to win the game, yet he rolls out guys, like, these horrible matchups, these horrible lineups. And, you know, Steve Kerr started JaVale McGee in the first two games, and that, you know, he abused Aldridge. Aldridge looked awful in game one. But then they kind of, you know, he shifted Pau Gasol in there. He made the switch. I thought it was a good switch of inserting Rudy Gay into the starting lineup. But then he did it for Kyle Anderson. And we left, you know, Patty Mills and Danny Green out there. And at times he's gone, Trace, with this ridiculous lineup of Bryn Forbes, Patty Mills, and Tony Parker, or Bryn Forbes, Patty Mills, and DeJounte Murray, and like these ridiculous lineups where these guys are way too small. You know, we had Patty Mills guarding Andre Iguodala. You know, you've got Tony Parker trying to guard Klay Thompson, who gets switched on a mismatch easily of Kevin Durant now on Parker, or Kevin Durant on Mills, or Kevin Durant on Bryn Forbes. And it's like, I don't know what Popovich is doing. It doesn't make any sense. And we've already discussed throughout the year how poorly we think he's handled the entire Kawhi Leonard situation. But now he's like, it's almost like he's being overly committed to this concept of playing the Spurs way, that he's not willing to make the appropriate adjustments. And I think it's really, really being exposed in this series.
Yeah, and you mentioned like all these three guard, like, yeah, they started last night with LaMarcus, Rudy, Patty, Danny, and DeJounte, and that's a pretty small lineup, you know, outside of Aldridge. But he's going on against JaVale McGee, and then you look at the rest of the roster. So there's three guards in the starting lineup. Then you got Ginobili on the bench. You have Forbes on the bench. You have Anderson, who we will kind of count him as like a hybrid guard forward. Tony Parker, Derek White, and Brandon Paul. That's like six other guys that are on your bench that all play guard. The only other guys are Pau Gasol and Davis Bertans that could play a slightly bigger position. So it's the way this team, I don't know what opponent this team was constructed to beat, but if the idea was going small against the Warriors to combat them going small, I don't know how that would have worked either, because and imagine Steph Curry was on the court. There's no way Patty Mills, Danny Green, and DeJounte Murray were going to stop that starting lineup if you swapped out. I forgot who they started in place of Curry, but if it was like, let's say it was Curry, Clay, Draymond, Durant, and McGee, and you ran out LaMarcus, Rudy, Patty, Danny, and DeJounte, like, what on earth would you be trying to accomplish with that lineup other than being down 40 points at the end of the first quarter?
It's almost like when the varsity team, the coach tells them, like, hey, guys, you're going to scrimmage against the JV. Like, that was, like, the equivalent of what that lineup was.
Yeah.
And I know we don't talk, like, kind of in Spurs Nation, in the Spurs world, like, it's almost blasphemy to ever say anything wrong about Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and Greg Popovich. Like, we've kind of been programmed over the last 20 years not to say anything wrong about those guys. And I don't really have anything wrong to say about Tim Duncan. Love him. He's been great. Don't have anything wrong to say about Manu. He's been playing with heart. He's 40 years old. When you start to talk to me about Tony Parker, I have a long list of issues. But we've rarely been critical of Greg Popovich. And I liken it to what we saw in Phil Jackson the last couple years. Phil Jackson ran the triangle offense for the better part of the entire decade of the 90s and the early 2000s. And Trace, it worked. He won 11 championships with the triangle offense. It was a deadly offense when it was run right and whenever you had the right team assembled. But we saw Phil Jackson really try and implement and force the triangle offense on the New York Knicks. And it didn't work. He tried bringing in Derek Fisher. It didn't work. And I'm not trying to draw a Spurs-Knicks parallel here. But we saw him really try and go, like, this offense works. And, yeah, it did. It had its glory day in the sun. And it had its, you know, it had its moment where it was the most unstoppable thing. But the game has changed, and Phil Jackson did not adapt with the game of basketball. The triangle offense did not adapt with the game of basketball. And now we are seeing Gregory Popovich, who we all love and should go down as one of the top coaches in NBA history, and we get that, and he's been great and all this kind of stuff, but he is stubborn, Trace, and he will not adjust. And he won't adjust his coaching. He won't adjust his, like, philosophy of coaching. And really and truthfully, as we transition into this Kawhi drama, him and R.C. Buford are not really adjusting the way that they organize and manage this team. And it's become very concerning. I think that this series is shining a light on how he's not adjusting as a coach. And I think that the entire NBA and all the fans across all 30 teams are seeing how the Spurs are not really adjusting to the age of the millennial superstar and the way that they've been handling this Kawhi Leonard situation.
Yeah, as far as coaching in this series goes, I hear you, and at the same time, I look at the first half of the second game and I think, wow, man, they executed the hell out of that game plan. And, you know, I have to assume that it was Popovich that came up with that game plan. And so I think what I want to say is that I don't know that he's making the, like, when the game plan doesn't work, you're absolutely right. He seems to get very stubborn. He doesn't make in-game adjustments. Like, he seems willing to go, you know, okay, after this game, I'll go figure out a different plan and we'll try to run that one next time we go out there. And so I think that's what happened after the first game, because they looked like, you know, the first half of the game too, the Spurs looked like a team that actually gave a damn, like they wanted to, you know, not get swept in the series, yeah, even though it's very unlikely that they'll win it. But everything, you know, as best as it could, everything was falling for them. They were only up, you know, they were still barely winning at halftime, but like that was like the grand and golden outcome we could have hoped for. And so, and then we see, you know, the third quarter starts and Golden State just goes on this tear and they're just, you know, ripping San Antonio. They ended up, you know, outscoring San Antonio by 11 in the third quarter. And the counter was to start the fourth quarter with like Bryn Forbes, Tony Parker, and Davis Bertans, and I don't know, DeJounte Murray might have been out there at that point. And I don't know if that's the count. Manu. So Manu was maybe the only intelligent move at that point. He was having a hell of a game. But, you know, so you're up like what, 6 at halftime, you're down 5 going into the fourth quarter, and your response is to throw the most unrecognizable lineup that exists on this Spurs team at, you know, whoever Golden State had out there, who is inevitably going to be better. And you know, it's hard to argue with the number of minutes that guys like LaMarcus played 37, Rudy played 36, Patty played 32. Like, I don't know if you necessarily want those guys to have more minutes. Maybe LaMarcus, you know, maybe LaMarcus can play a full 48. I don't think so, and it's probably not the best thing for him. But yeah, I just to that I go a little, you know, I think the blame was kind of on Pop, and I also think there's a lot of blame that no one has wanted to put on R.C. Buford for the way this roster is constructed.
Yes.
You know, he has more say in that than anybody. And, you know, we both mentioned it earlier, but the way this Spurs team is built is not built to play teams like Golden State in the regular season or in the playoffs. So, you know, as much as we want to say, like, oh, Pop's, you know, kind of been untouchable, and, you know, maybe we should criticize him more, and I think that's totally fair. But I think we also really need to start asking for more out of R.C. Buford. I mean, that guy, you know, it's not necessarily a GM's job to be doing interviews all the time or really, you know, going out of their way to talk. But an example of a GM that has been kind of getting in front of anything that could have possibly happened this year is probably, I kind of want to say Danny Ainge over in Boston. You know, I feel like there's been, if I ever wanted on a weekly basis to get an update on what's going on with Gordon Hayward's recovery or what happened with Kyrie's knee and why he had to go under the knife with like 2 weeks left in the regular season, it hasn't been hard to find that kind of information. Whereas R.C. Buford hasn't given an interview. He briefly talked in January only to deny that there is a rift between him the rest of the front office and Kawhi Leonard. But it wasn't really, you know, so much an interview as it was I got to get out here and like say something,
yeah,
just because otherwise, you know, the wolves are circling. And I feel like it's probably, you know, it's been that way. Like, I've never in my entire life really thought a lot about hearing interviews with R.C. Buford, but there hasn't really been a lot of reason to until now. And it's been pretty disappointing, the amount of content or whatever you want to call it that has not come out of the front office. Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, if you put yourself in RC Buford's shoes, you know, you like to pretend you're a GM every once in a while, but like, what's going through your head if you're RC Buford right now? And like, maybe why, if there is a good reason for not addressing the public or the media about anything, what is it?
Yeah, I think if I'm RC Buford at this point, I hope that he's recognizing like, oops, I kind of did this one wrong, because this roster is built. And of course there is an underlying expectation. The team did expect that Kawhi Leonard was going to play, you know, 82 games. They thought he was going to play a full season. I'm not denying that. I don't, you know, that's probably a given for everybody. But when you look at the team, you know, there's a ton of guys that could have been an option. Like, the Spurs let David Lee walk. You know, they could have brought him back for the veteran minimum. You know, there's other players that they could have brought back, veterans that they could have got for, you know, a 1-year deal or something to that effect. But no, instead, what are they doing? They go out and they sign a Brandon Paul. You know, they go out and sign a Bryn Forbes. They go and get these Joffrey Laverne types. Like, that's not helping your roster. Like, you're just filling the end of the bench, you know? If you take a Patty Mills and you give him a heavy contract, and you take a Pau Gasol and you give him a heavy contract, and you go, okay, well, we gave those guys heavy contracts, so now let's go get a couple young guys. Like, what are you getting in your young guys? Like, these are guys that are, they're G League, you know, kind of, okay, I made it in the G League, and now here's my chance to play in the NBA because I got a guaranteed contract with the Spurs. That's not helping your team. That's just doing a couple G League guys a solid. You know, that's the extent of that. And that's not how you build a championship roster. So I'm hoping that RC Buford is sitting there going, ooh, I need to stay out of the press, because if I go and give an interview, I don't want any attention on me. And unfortunately, the Kawhi situation has been so, you know, has spotlighted the Spurs, that I'm glad that we're starting to ask some of these questions of R.C. Buford, and I'm glad we're starting to ask some of these questions of Greg Popovich, because they're about to have their work cut out for them this summer. Regardless of if Kawhi stays, they're going to have to make the situation appealing to him to stay. But if he decides, like, hey, you got, if these reports are true that he really is that upset, which is debatable, and he wants out, R.C. Buford's going to have to really work some magic to get a right package for Kawhi Leonard and get some talent back in that trade and keep this ship sailing, because if Kawhi leaves and they don't get a good return out of that, then this team doesn't really have a bunch of bright spots, and they don't typically get good draft picks. I mean, do you really think that you want to wait 4 or 5 years to see if Brandon Paul and Bryn Forbes really work out for you? Like, that's just not good.
No, and look, like, you know, so we got a, sorry, 2 years ago they drafted DeJounte Murray, and I still think that is probably going to be a very good pick for them, especially where they got him, because they were like one of the last three picks that year.
And 27, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. But if you like look at if you look in recent history, like I can't name a draft pick that the Spurs made that like really sticks out as like an excellent draft pick. And like you said, you know, they've been drafting in the last third of the draft, like in the last 20 years, like pretty much every year. So, you know, you don't expect, like, you know, you don't draft John Wall at number 27. You know, that just doesn't,
right.
Those kind of things don't happen. But they haven't made a lot of impressive picks. And I know they love to, like, draft guys you've never heard of, stash them in Europe, and then 6 years later, here's some French guy who, you know, no one's ever heard of before, and he's supposed to be really awesome. But these things haven't been panning out. Like we, and it's like you said earlier, we always like, oh, they know what they're doing. They're going to stash these guys in various parts of Europe and Asia, and we'll have a great team. But the only reason they were able to do that is because they already had, like, they already had a Tim Duncan, and for a couple of years,
right,
you know, with him, David Robinson, and like that's easy to build around. Like you can grab role players
and
build around them. Yeah, and then they got, you know, they got probably really lucky with both Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. Like those are, to have all those things happen in such a short span is ridiculous luck, no matter how talented your GM is, because guys just flame out all the time, and they haven't. I don't think they've hit since then. I mean, they traded up to get Kawhi Leonard, and that obviously is. Until this year,
that,
like, the best thing has happened since Tim Duncan. But if we have to throw away Kawhi Leonard because of the fact that the Spurs organization has ruined that relationship, then you kind of, that kind of nullifies the genius that went into taking him in the first place, if you ask me. So you're looking at
I was going to say the very thing that got them Kawhi Leonard could end up being the very thing that loses them Kawhi Leonard, because they don't have a core around him that's appealing. And when you don't have a core that's appealing, if he's disgruntled, like, what are his motivations to stay? I still think $219 million is a lot of money to say no to. But I do want to know what your thoughts are, Trace, on Greg Popovich's comments after the game about LaMarcus Aldridge. He said something to the effect of, I've never been more proud of a player who's been there for his teammates night after night after night. You know, I thought it was more of a compliment on LaMarcus Aldridge than it was shade at Kawhi Leonard. But I do think that it was ill-advised considering the current climate of the Spurs organization.
Yeah, I think that's pretty spot on, Steven. I mean, I bet if you and I spent 30 minutes on YouTube looking up Pop post-game pressers after, like, one of his players has played an amazing game, I think you would probably find very similar quotes in a lot of those post-game pressers about, you know, whoever it might have been that night, Tony, Manu, Tim, Kawhi, maybe Patty, you know, literally anybody. I bet you'd find a number of quotes like that. And I was thinking about, like, as it was happening last night, I was like, oh my God, he's throwing shade at Kawhi Leonard on national TV. And then I kind of, you know, I was like, maybe not. And then, of course, because I'm an addict, I went on Twitter like 10 minutes later, and the only thing was just like Pop's throwing Kawhi under the bus, like the world collapsing, and you know, Kawhi Leonard's going to be traded tomorrow. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
That's a stretch.
Yeah. But, like, you know, to give Pop some credit, like, LaMarcus, we haven't even really talked about this yet, but LaMarcus played an incredible game of basketball last night.
Yeah, he really did.
He was 11 for 21. Really, he made all 12 of his free throws. Like, he had 12 rebounds. He was a minus 8 somehow because the rest of his teammates around him just didn't want to do him any solids. But
he deserved that, like, praise.
My point is exactly that. Like, he deserved everything Greg Popovich said about him, and it's true, man. He's one of the only guys, and, like, you could say this. You could say, if you wanted to, you could say Pop's just kind of throwing shade at everybody on the team, because there are a lot of games this season the Spurs would not have won if LaMarcus hadn't put the team on his back, and that, you know, including guys that were in the building. So is it?
Yeah, they stuck without LaMarcus Aldridge. They're a lottery team.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, they're all hanging out with the Phoenix Suns right now if LaMarcus Aldridge isn't sitting around him. That team was the worst one in basketball. So was it shade against Kawhi? You can look at it that way, but I'm going to choose to believe that it was a very earnest phrase of what LaMarcus did last night, especially considering what he didn't do in Game 1.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, too. It was well-deserved. And the Kawhi thing, man, it's gotten crazy out of hand. I thought, you know, the The concern that I have is that there's so much national attention on it now, and there's so much commentary. Like, I don't care if Kawhi is not on social media. I don't care if he's a hermit crab or not. But you can't turn on any TV or any, like, you can't go on the internet without seeing it. I saw an article from businessinsider.com the other day about Kawhi Leonard. Like, it's the story's literally everywhere, and I don't doubt that it's bad right now. Like, it clearly is, and there'll have to be some serious fence mending. But the reality is, man, is Kawhi Leonard's going to have to say no. They're going to have to, like, he's going to have to say this issue is too big for $219 million. And Trace, there's a lot of people in this world that I don't like and that I can't stand, but I don't know if I have $219 million of unforgiveness in my heart. Like, I can let a lot of things go for $219 million. And I still think, like, it's in the Spurs' best interest and it's in Kawhi's best interest to all work this thing out.
Yeah, and you know, if I'm Kawhi, if I'm the Spurs, and there's one thing that I need to show, that I want to, like, show Kawhi this offseason, that this is a team that he can win with, a team that, you know, wants to win with him. I'm looking at LaMarcus Aldridge, and I'm saying, like, look at what LaMarcus is doing right now. There's nothing that I don't see anything that LaMarcus is doing, from my view, that wouldn't complement what Kawhi Leonard can do when he's back and healthy. Like, there's no reason that LaMarcus can score 34 points, but that means Kawhi only scores 10 points. And, you know, in a perfect world, like, for example, they're totally different style of play, but Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant are just killing us in this series. Yeah. And, you know, we don't have two guys that can do that to anybody, but if we did, you know, there's enough touches for both those guys to score 30 if they need to in a high stakes playoff game.
Absolutely. And I hope that, I obviously hope that they can work it out, because it would be really nice to have Kawhi Leonard be on the San Antonio Spurs basketball team. I think that's what everybody needs to just work out, because that's good for everybody involved. Trace, we're running out of time here, but what do the Spurs need to do in Game 3 and Game 4 to hopefully get a win here, which is unlikely to say the least, but is there any chance for them?
No, I don't think they're winning the series. We talked last time, I think the consensus was they had to steal one of the first two on the road and probably not lose both of them by double digits, you know, and they have to play flawless basketball at home, which is something that they've done more often than not this season. You know, they were still one of the top three home teams. So I'm hopeful they get a win, but I don't think it's going to be enough. The Golden State's, I think at this point, a five-game series is the best-case scenario.
Yep. Unfortunately, I agree with you, and I wish it weren't so, but I think it's time that everybody starts getting used to a longer summer than we're used to in general, and enjoy some sun and beach wherever folks may be. Trace, it's always a joy to talk with you, man. Pleasure talking Spurs basketball with you, bud.
Thanks, man. Go Spurs, go.
Go Spurs, go. And don't forget, you can follow Trace at Dina, D-I-N-N-A underscore D-A-W-G, Dina Dog, on Twitter. You can follow me at the Hailstone, and stick close to SA Spurs Dynasty on Twitter as well. You can follow us for all your recaps and analysis. Game 3 coming up on Thursday night, Game 4 on Sunday. We'll be watching, and we'll have a podcast recap for you afterwards. Keep the faith, Spurs fans, and don't forget, go Spurs, go.